It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for a brand new broadcast week here at the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. That's where you know you need to go. If, for instance, you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours when this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern and 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific time and all other times wherever you may happen to be. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is, in fact, Monday, the 6th day of January 2020. This will mark the first full week of 2020, the last year of an old decade, damn it. And we'll have a full broadcast week. I should note, however, that since this is the last week before next week's performance week in the theater piece that I'm participating in, I'll probably be backing the program off by about a half hour, maybe an hour, depending on circumstances, because now we're beginning to work things that just are a little bit more time-consuming. And then next week, of course, program reminder, program note, next week, of course, there will be no live programs from Monday the... Oh, heavens... What day, Monday the 13th, Friday the 17th, and then back to normal thereafter as I begin to move ever homeward. Okay, so it shouldn't be any too complicated. And this evening, as a matter of fact, this evening is publicity photos, newspaper stuff. And I have to be there early. So I'll be knocking off probably at about the hour and a half mark. But there was no way I couldn't be here this afternoon because this profit business, this being a profit business, is getting kind of irksome. But yeah, I guess it comes with the turf, even when I don't have the frayed purple robe with the torn appliqued moons and stars and kiss me, will thee kiss me in the dark baby written in glow in the dark paint across the front and my magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always says answer hazy ask again later. It is, as they say, what it is. And it was Friday when then the program was over, so really couldn't, you know, it was Friday when I realized, well, damn, we did it again. Yeah, once again, we were so far out in front of an issue that nobody was even thinking about it when we were. And we'll get to that in a second. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And so consequently, thanks go out to our subscribers for this past Saturday and Sunday and today. So that means thanks to Paul, and thanks to Catherine, and thank you to Thomas, and thank you to Roberto and James and Kevin in Colorado Springs, and thanks to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to Kitty in Boston. Thank you to Chris in Germany. Thank you to John. Thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thanks to Alex. And thanks to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thanks to Don in West Tennistan. And thanks to Bob in North Carolina. And getting us started on this evening's fundraising, thanks very, very kindly. She shared of her birthday money. Thanks to Lady B out in the Springs. Thank you very much indeed. And if you'd like to be part of the merry little band, we happy few who keep all of this going, well, by all means, we always need new subscribers. You know, the long-term goal was to have 400 $10 a month subscribers. And now that we're doing the healthcare thing, I guess that number is a little bit different, but we've never gotten much. Well, we're kind of hover around, I think, 100 over the course of a month, counting Patreon too. And thanks again to our Patreon subscribers for helping to keep this all on the air. But if you'd like to be a subscriber, we'd love to get closer to that fantastic 400. Just go on over to headon.live, click on contribute, and the PayPal interface is there, and there's a little box that you can check that says make this happen every month. And just a reminder, you know, if you give up that 10 bucks a month to keep independent progressive broadcasting alive, you will be setting yourself back not quite an entire pack of Juicy Fruit gum, or any other flavor for that matter, every 2 days. Yep, but not quite the whole pack. We'd have to get into day three before it was the entire pack. So the fundraising goal for this afternoon is $190, and hopefully we'll knock some of that out. Good afternoon to the folks wandering in on the Facebook stream. Howdy to Tracy and Dave and Melton and Thomas from FYINation.com. Thank you. Thanks for popping by. And over in the chat room, we've got the Merry Wacky Zany Real-Time Multimedia Extravaganza Band. Early arrivers, Anatole and Squeaky, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. And I don't know what it's like in Northern California right now, but it's been a beautiful, beautiful day to fold some space here in the last dwindling foothills of Appalachia in the northwest corner of Alabama. Got up around 60 degrees today, and blue skies and sunshine, can't argue with it. So, Anatole says, tell us about the profit business, Mr. Bob. I'm going to do that. And I guess there's a little bit of setup involved with this. So we'll do that. Let's see here. Where'd it go? There it is. It was months ago when we were talking about the processes by which the legal processes which are supposed to animate our governmental structure. And we were talking about things like subpoenas and serving them. And what would happen if, for instance, one law enforcement agency tried to enforce the law against the President of the United States. And in the course of that conversation, we talked about about one law enforcement agency shooting it out with, say, the Secret Service. Well, that's all. I mean, it's all kind of academic, I guess. But at the same time, it is a possibility, even if one hopes that such a possibility is extreme in its remoteness. But people other than us have finally gotten around to thinking about that too. It was Friday when a hearing took place that involved counsel for the United States House of Representatives and counsel for Nitwit Nero. And the judge, the federal judge on the bench, lifetime appointment, Article 3, all the power and majesty. Well, that judge that day, this past Friday, was Naomi Rao. Naomi Rao is a maggot. Naomi Rao is a maggot appointment. And she doesn't have the best. She's just another one of those skeevy, dodgy, sketchy Trump judicial appointments. You know, that Moscow Mitch McConnell has been so eagerly cramming through the Senate. And in the course of this hearing, which had to do with the fact that the White House is a lawless, nefarious place that is trying to undo the legal traditions of this country in favor of an autocracy in the hands of a madman. And so, you know, the House went to court to enforce its subpoenas. And the courtroom they wound up in was the courtroom presided over by Naomi Rao, Trumpansy. And the House of Representatives was represented by a lawyer by the name of Doug Letter. He is the general counsel of the House of Representatives. And Naomi Rao, who is utterly unqualified to sit in judgment of so much as what to put on a pizza, let alone lives of human beings or the fate of the republic, Naomi Rao wanted to know whether the House of Representatives had used all of the remedies available to it to obtain the information which they were seeking via subpoena. And she wanted to know why the House of Representatives had come to the courts, for pity's sakes, to enforce a subpoena that was issued by the Congress under the authority of, wait for it, the courts. And why didn't they go about it some other way? Well, as you'll hear, Counsel Letter explained what those other remedies might be, and the fact that. And, of course, we've got Iran stuff to talk to and whatnot, but this is the backdrop to it. Even without the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, we would still be in a hard, hard place, a rock, between a rock and a hard, hard place, because of the lawlessness of this administration. And so the recording, they played the recording Friday night over on MSNBC. I think Ali Velshi was sitting in for Lawrence O'Donnell. And, you know, anybody who's old enough to have, say, sat through the OJ trial, for instance, knows that, you know, that there can be some bizarre stuff. Court proceedings that are ordinarily supposed to be fairly dry and sedate can occasionally get weird. And this exchange in the United States federal court in D.C. this past Friday is past strange. This exchange is, Hunter S. Thompson weird, as in when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. This is that. So let's see if... Let's see if we can get that audio going. Here we go.
That's stunning. That's just stunning. If for this court rules that the House is entitled to this material, the Attorney General is going to say, I guess what we would do is we would use the main remedy that the House has had from the beginning. We'll send the Sergeant-at-Arms over to the Justice Department. I cannot imagine that anybody at the Justice Department is going to interfere with him doing his duty as an officer of the House, and he will pick up the grand jury material and he will bring it to the House.
So you do have some methods of self-help.
Absolutely. We can send the sergeant and he can go have a gun battle.
Why not avail yourself of that remedy?
The reason is obvious.
When was the last time that was done?
Clearly, it hasn't been done
forever.
Why is
it obvious?
And that's why, again, this was discussed in the first case. That's why we don't do that anymore. We don't have the Sergeant-at-Arms go out and arrest people and maybe have a gun battle with Mr. Barr's FBI security deal. Instead, we go to court.
Hi, joining me now, former federal prosecutor Glenn.
Our buddy Horst was opining over the weekend that he hoped that the phrase "let that sink in" will disappear over the early here at the beginning of 2020. And I was right on the verge of saying, "Ooh, let that sink in." But I'm not going to say "let that sink in" because I get the feeling that it goes through Horst like a dose of salt. So I won't. But you heard that, right? I'm not going to play it again. One, Naomi Rao is breathtaking in the breadth and depth of her, I would say ignorance, but no, I think this has to have some stupidity folded in as well. How did she get confirmed to a lifetime appointment to the court without understanding the process whereby the court rules on the legality of subpoena? Anybody? Bueller? And of course, I think there's also a subtext here. And that is that she asks the question, and you'll notice that when counsel letter responds with, I think, what can only be described as incredulity, she complains, I'm asking a hypothetical. But she couldn't spell hypothetical if you spotted her the H, the Y, the P, the O, the T, the H, the E, the T, the I, and the C, and the L, and say, okay, just one consonant, Naomi.
Is it Z? I'm asking a hypothetical.
But the like I said, there's subtext. And in this case, is the subtext is, she has a case before her involving subpoenae to an executive branch that is run by the person to whom she is indebted for her lifetime appointment to the federal bench. And it's not even close. The case itself is not even close. No one would make the argument that the Trump regime is making, because a competent judge of competent jurisdiction, and quite possibly a first-year law student, not even out of the first semester, knows how you rule on this case. You rule that the subpoenae, are legal and constitutional and must be honored. In this case, we're talking about grand jury materials. There's only one problem for Naomi Rao, though. And not too many people were talking about this. I mean, this story did get some, it got some airplay. It was sort of lost among all the rumblings and grumblings and bumblings of this stupid war that Nitwit Nero keeps threatening to ramp up, that he just started. But nobody really mentioned the fact that the reason she's hemming and hawing Naomi Rao like she is because she may herself very well know the answer to this legal issue. And that is that Donald J. Trump, the J stands for genius, that Donald J. Trump loses. There's not a credible argument on his side. Nothing. Bupkis. And she knows that under, even with her limited legal knowledge, that she should rule in favor of the House of Representatives. But she owes the fact that she has her lips locked for the rest of her life on the federal tit to the guy she has to rule against. Now, theoretically, she could have said, hey, I'm conflicted out of this because, frankly, if Donald Trump handed me a big old shit sandwich, I'd take a bite and swear to God it was pate, because I'm a maggot and I do what my dictator tells me. But instead, she wants to be clever and try to figure out a way to not rule in the House's favor. And so, yeah, why not? Head on over to the Department of Justice with the Sergeant of Arms with guns drawn and battle it out with the federales. I wish I could say that it is astonishing that is where we are with the first few days of 2020 under our belts. But no, as of January the 20th, 2017, this day was coming. And days that are even weirder than that are still off in the distance, and you can see it and you can hear it, like the puff of smoke from a train 10 miles away in flat land, and you know it's coming. And so it was that months ago,
we were talking about potential armed conflicts between various law enforcement agencies as a result of the lawlessness, the criminality of this gang of thugs in the White House. And even though we expect this kind of stuff, it doesn't make it any less weird to see it happening in real time. James in Illinois writes and says, keep in mind that we have a president who is constantly proposing the commission of war crimes because he can't help but shoot from the hip with the most cruel method he can think of, figuring that, as Nixon put it, if the president does it, it's not illegal. I don't care about cultural sites for my own purposes, but as a historical relic, I'm smart enough to know that these things are priceless. But more than that, they are irreplaceable. And what we're talking about is collective punishment. There are American citizens who would be punished by the loss of these sites. And what's gained by their destruction? Not a goddamn thing. And so that's one of the other stories that I wanted to make sure that we got to on this More In Monday, because it is More In Monday. Note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Whatever happened to the good old days when two politicians could settle their differences over a duel? It almost feels like some of that shit's coming back. I've been wading through a history of the Congress from 1830 to 1860, and it's a powerful piece of historical reading. And some of it you just sort of read with your mouth hanging open, catching flies. Because on the one hand, we'd like to think that this is a civilized country, but on the other hand, we are often reminded that it ain't. This country has long had a gun violence problem. What, I think 9 or 10 maybe? People were killed in that era in dueling. And we may be sort of headed back in that direction. There was a time when if a member of Congress brought up the issue of slavery, there were Southern members of Congress who would draw knives and stand there on the floor of the House and threaten the life of that member of Congress for daring to say anything bad about the pernicious evil that was slavery. Let that rattle around a little bit. And so over the weekend, Julius Geezer is outraged. He bullied Iran, and Iran didn't bully. They didn't take to it. They didn't run away from it. They didn't cower in fear. And in fact, and I guess it's because anybody that could passively qualify as having something in the same zip code as good advice, zip code hell, area code, as for Trump, is long since gone. You know, one of the things that we have to bear in mind is that, let's go here. Over the weekend, the New York Times published a story about how Geezer Disgustus came about ordering the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. And the way that it was explained was that his military advisors would put together a package or a list of scenarios for his consideration, and that in there they would always put in something that was the outright ridiculous. and then they would pitch him on whatever it was they wanted him to really do by comparing it to the outrageous, crazy thing on the list. Now, sir, we could do this, or we could do something that's absolutely batshit crazy, sir, like this assassination. Now, this is going to open up a trick bag of absolute malice. But, you know, you could do that. You could order the, you can get into the assassination game, sir. And as far as I'm concerned, to the extent that those were members of the military, and they were, I mean, you're talking your types with lots of stars on their costumes. And as far as I'm concerned, there should probably be a court-martial or two involved with doing what they did. With things like blindfolds and cigarettes for afters. Because, see, you can't give... I mean, that maybe that worked with Barack Obama or more so with Dim Leader. Obama and Clinton were both, whatever else you say about them, brilliant men, thinkers. Not so much Dim Leader and Tangerine Tiberius. But in the sweet name of Almighty God, you cannot give a criminally insane plan to a criminally insane person and not have the criminally expect to have the criminally insane person pick the criminally insane plan. Because they're going to do it every time. And that is exactly what happened with the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. The people who think they're geniuses at the Pentagon gave the criminally insane person the criminally insane plan, and the criminally insane person said, hey, let's do the criminally insane thing. I like that. And we're surprised. Why? And then there's this. You know how we chuckle every time that we say, Mike Pompeo graduated first in his class at West Point. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, what a knee slapper. Well, it turns out that he and one of his classmates, I can't think if it was General Milley, or if it's Mike Esper, the Secretary of Defense, but they were bosom buddies, Pompeo and the other one, from way back in their West Point days. Now, I'm beginning to think it's the West Point Community College for the criminally insane, but never mind. And so they've been buddies all their adult lives, and they were the ones who got together and tag-teamed Venerial Vespasian into ramping up hostilities with Iran, because they've had a little Republican stiffy for slaughtering some Iranians for almost, if not the entirety of their aforementioned adult lives. If a fella didn't know better, he'd say that this was a criminal conspiracy. And it very likely is. Not much doubt. And so here we are. Now we're in the assassination game. You may recall that the CIA, those that wacky but occasionally misguided band of patriots. Once wanted to assassinate Fidel Castro by giving him a poisoned wetsuit. And they also wanted to poison his beard and make his beard fall out because they said that would make him die of embarrassment. And when this stuff came to light in the 70s, we passed a law that forbade the United States government from getting into the back into the assassination business. And yet here we are. Since the guy had the word general in front of his name, the maggots are taking the position that, well, he was fair game. He was a military target. But it was an assassination any way you slice it. That is, if you're anybody but the Associated Press. They put out a piece over the weekend explaining why they were not using the word assassination to describe the assassination of General Soleimani. And it was some of the most pathetic drivel that I have read in recent memory. Oh, yeah, that's right. James in Illinois says, hey, Castro, don't forget the exploding cigar. Oh, how could I? And so the Associated Press put out this piece headlined by, and it's by John Danishevsky. Was the drone attack on Iranian general an assassination? And John Danishevsky begins by saying, the AP style book, considered a news industry Bible, defines assassination as the murder of a politically important or prominent individual by surprise attack. Huh. Murder. Politically important. Okay, he was. He was prominent. Okay. So we've met all of those. And surprise and attack. Yep. Okay. According to the AP style book, it's an assassination. Not so fast, though. We're talking here about the multimillionaire for-profit media. And so consequently, this writer for the Associated Press, noting, for instance, that an executive order has been signed in every presidency up to this one. No person employed by or acting on behalf of the United States government shall engage in or conspire to engage in assassination. But then our intrepid reporter goes on to explain that that hasn't slowed us down, for instance, from assassinating a propagandist for Al-Qaeda. Remember Al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old boy that we assassinated alongside his daddy? And then this. The AP has mostly refrained from describing Soleimani's death as an assassination, both because it would require that the news service decide that the act was a murder, and because the term is politically freighted. We're scared to death that one of the maggots will come and assassinate one of us if we tell the truth that Donald Trump had someone assassinated. See how it works. I sent that along to our buddy Dr. John, And he responded, Jesus, we've gazed through the navel and now we're down into the intestine. That's about the size of it. And of course, the multimillionaire for-profit media will always provide a level of analysis commensurate with the greatest profit. Because, after all, that's who they are. That's why they are the for-profit media. And so don't be surprised that even if the rest of the world is acknowledging that this murder of a prominent and politically important individual by sneak or surprise attack was an assassination, the for-profit media will kind of cringe a little bit. And, well, we don't want to call it that. It might be the truth. Make me sick. Like I said, even though I'm the one who said no matter how weird yesterday was, today will be weirder, and no matter how weird today is, tomorrow will be weirder still, doesn't mean I like it. Our buddy Reverbo sent along something. He said, saw this headline at The Onion, quote, everything slightly worse than yesterday, unquote. Reverbo noting, once again, you're out in front of it. Reverbo had previously said, yeah, things are moving ever closer to World War III. We would see how it lines up, just how important Iran really is in the big picture. It's amusing to hear the Russians, never ones to shy away from disproportionate responses or initiatives, negatively weigh in on our tactics. Adventurous is how I believe they referred to our retaliation on Iran. Laughable. Of course, Reverbo concludes, who would have thought Archduke Franz Ferdinand was a significant piece on the board? True enough. But chess games can be lost by the loss of a pawn as well as a king. So, as noted, we apparently, well, there's no apparently, to it. We're in the assassination business. But the problem with trying to be the sole proprietor in an assassination business is that somebody always wants to compete. Somebody also always wants to go in business with you. And so, lo and behold, I guess it's no surprise that some folks in Iran are talking about how maybe their country should get in the game alongside us, that what's good for the sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. Nitwit Nero doesn't have anybody with enough brains to have warned him about that. Well, sir, you know, if you assassinate one of theirs, they're going to want to assassinate one of ours. Up to and including you, sir. Yeah. They're a little creeped out now. They've let this genie out of the bottle. And now, well, a media outlet in Iran has started a crowdfunding campaign asking every Iranian to contribute $1 to the fund. That would make it, since there are 80 million people in Iran, that would make it an $80 million fund, and guess what they want to use the fund for? Yeah, that's right, it's a reward. It is literally a bounty on the head of Donald J. Trump. The J stands for Jumpin' Jehoshaphat. Yeah. Now, it may be somewhat tongue-in-cheek. I don't think so. And it's kind of to be expected, isn't it? After all, over the weekend, Marcus Aurelius, there in the White House, declared that, I have a list of 52 sites in Iran, important cultural sites, one for every one of the hostages they took way back before I'd even lost my first $10 million. I've got a list of 52 cultural sites, and we will bomb the bejesus out of them if Iran doesn't do exactly what I told them. This then prompted prompted Iranians to go on social media and start posting pictures of the most magnificent cultural treasures of Iran, and they are many. And it's not all mosques. The ruins of Persepolis, of holy Pasargadae, Susa. Treasures, not cultural treasures, not just of the world of the Iranian people, but of the world, world heritage sites that presumably Chlamydia Claudius would like to bomb to rubble. You know who else destroyed the hell out of priceless cultural world heritage sites? ISIS. ISIS did that. And so Donald J. Trump has confirmed that he operates on a similar level as ISIS, who devastated the ruins in Syria dating back to pre-Roman times. Or the Taliban who dynamited the priceless and exquisitely beautiful Buddhas at Bamiyan in Afghanistan. Lovingly carved by hand into the face of the rock cliff itself over the course of years in work that we can't even fully understand how they accomplished it without high explosives, with nothing but chisels and art and vision and love. And the Taliban blew it all to pieces in the name of their sick God. Which is, of course, a product of their sick minds. And now there is actually a person occupying the seat of official power in the United States who wants to get down and wallow in the same filthy muck as the bloodthirsty barbarians from the Taliban and ISIS. That's who he wants the world to think we are. And that is disgusting. but it is also where we are. And if he is allowed to continue onward, it is where it is in fact who we will be. We'll be like the Christians who burned the library at Alexandria. And in one gigantic fire destroyed vast amounts of the learning of the Western world and part of the Eastern world forevermore. Or the priests who in the 16th century piled up a mountain of books made out of bark paper and fawn skin in what we know as Mexico that bore the accountings and the wisdom of an ancient people, set fire to it in the name of their sick god. You see how a theme begins to emerge here? And took from the future we know not what. Over here on this side of the pond, some wags, I saw one where one wag had taken a photograph of Florida and put an X over Palm Beach and wrote and drew an arrow and said, "He's here on the golf course." Well, you got humor is humor. And when you think back to the Sharpie incident with the hurricane, that's immediately where my mind went, and I thought it was a funny little piece of satire. However, a man named Hisamuddin Ashena, an Iranian who is an advisor to Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, well, he tweeted a link over the weekend to an article in Forbes. And the article in Forbes is entitled "The Definitive Net Worth of Donald Trump. What's Donald Trump Really Worth?" And then proceeds to list his properties. 1290 Avenue of the Americas, 40 Wall Street, Trump Tower, 6 East 57th Street, Trump Park Avenue, Trump Park, Trump Park East, Trump Plaza, Trump World Tower, Trump International Hotel and Tower in New York, 555 California Street, San Francisco. That's where Microsoft and a whole bunch of lawyers have offices, but it doesn't have Trump's name on it, so nobody knows to, like, go there and splatter blood on it or picket it or protest there. Trump International in Las Vegas, Trump International in Washington, Trump Winery in Charlottesville, Trump International Hotel and Tower in Chicago, undeveloped lots in California, golf clubs in Scotland and Ireland and Doral and Mar-a-Lago, and, well, you get the idea. The advisor to the president of Iran tweeted out a handy-dandy list of Trump's buildings. I have no idea why. I am, of course, lying. And now he's probably sweating a little bit. But being the grifter that he is, I would not be surprised to find out that Donald Trump would be just fine if the Iranians wanted to, say, attack Doral or one of those nondescript buildings. Why? because then he would do what he always does. He would grift the insurance companies. Because grifters gonna grift. And he'd wind up making money out of the process. But here we are. And there you go. And so we're about 5 minutes before the hour. And like I said, this was going to be a short program anyway, because we've got publicity night down to the theater. And I've got to head out for that and costume up and stuff. That's a good idea. Steve in New York with an email. We should preface everything the for-profit media says with this. Thus spake the prophet Mammon. Yeah, I don't think it's a prophet. I think it's an out-and-out god. Yeah. Steve adds, here's some scary shit. There's no way that Trump knew about the 52 hostages, let alone the 52 cultural sites. This tells me that someone has actually presented him with a plan to do that. Exactly. Iran is not Iraq. This is a very sophisticated country with an educated and sophisticated and young population who were anxiously awaiting to embrace Westernism. Now they're united in revenge. Can you say suicide bombers? I'm going to make a bet that within 10 days, everything we're talking about will make its way into the Mammon media. Ooh, that's good. Mammon Media. I'm just a sucker for good alliteration. Yeah, I will. They'll finally get around to it. 52 cultural sites. But Steve's right. Somebody drew it up for him. It's someone from the Pentagon, one of those advisors. The same one that said, oh, look, well, you know, there's always use a drone with a Hellfire missile to kill General Suleiman. Yeah, well, see, we'll put that on there. That's the crazy one. He'll never pick that one. And that way we can get what we want by comparing it to the crazy thing. Fuck, he picked the crazy thing. Now we got to do it. And that's why I'm not sanguine about a report that I saw not too long back saying pundits doubt that the military would push the button if Donald Trump told them to push the button. Bullshit. You don't get to be a general with all those stars on your costume. By rocking the boat and challenging orders. You get there in the American system by snapping a salute, saying, yes, sir, and grunting hoo-ah, and going and doing what you were damned well told to do. That's how privates get to be corporals, and it's how captains get to be admirals, and how colonels get to be generals. By doing what you're fucking told. So, not to upset anybody, but if you've been giving yourself anything resembling solace over the notion that maybe the generals would save us by not nuking someone if Donald Trump told them to nuke them, I think the news stories from this weekend sort of puts paid to that, doesn't it? Because they're the ones that brought him the idea of assassinating one of the most popular people in an adversarial nation. Who, by the way, knew somebody who knew somebody who was in business with the fucking Trumps. How about that? That was out there too. Yeah, exactly. Randy in PA, speaking of the generals, says, like a little fucking automaton. Bingo. Wind him up and let him salute, 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 salute. Hooah, 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 hooah. Yes, we'll nuke whatever you say, our dear God Emperor. And in the meantime, Dr. Bandy Lee continues to beg. She is like a lone voice crying in the wilderness. Continues to beg someone to do a mental health hold on this man before he gets us all killed. So far, not so much. And so that brings us to the top of the hour. And like I said, I wanted to make sure that we got at least a little bit of a program in, because there was just too much of this shit going on to let it ride for a day. Oh, and now that we've been told to get the fuck out, the United States military is preparing to take its caissons over hill and over dale, exit stage left, because he managed to fuck that up too. I mean, get out of Iraq. I never wanted to be in Iraq. There are still millions of us who were absolutely right in 2002 when we were saying, don't do this. And dim leader was saying, he tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam, we're taking him out. And then we assassinated him too. Yeah, there's Jim with some affirmation. Yes, sir, right away, sir. Sir, yes, sir. Who's going to tell a president not to? Who's going to tell who's going to have the courage to tell a president no and lose his career immediately? Randy in PA says, that's a man baby, dear God Emperor, to you, Bob. Damn Skippy it is. I appreciate the correction. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Assassination, an anagram, or at least close to one, is a nation's asshat. Yes, and guess who that is, says Jack. Oh, yes, it is, it is, it is. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina, Stan, notes a tweet from Natasha Bertrand, a journalist. General Milley has just said the letter regarding troop movements out of Iraq was a draft and releasing it was a mistake. Natasha Bertrand noting the draft letter proposing U.S. repositioning out of Iraq that General Milley just called poorly worded a mistake was delivered to the Iraqi military. Oops. Wait a minute, we're running away? Well, sir, they told us to leave. I don't give a fuck. It's Iraq. It's not like it's theirs. But sir, our people will be slaughtered. Well, they shouldn't have joined the fucking military if they didn't want to be slaughtered. I stayed out of Vietnam and nobody slaughtered me, see? That's my very stable genius brain. I'm Donald J. Trump. The J stands for genius.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for joining in. And back tomorrow evening at the regular time for a considerably more regular program. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our PayPal and our Patreon subscribers. Thanks to the folks who kick in a la carte to keep things going. Thank you so very much. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time to engage in this program in whatever manner you so choose to do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.